Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested. And all thumbs up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to Recovery Rocks. I am Lisa, here with my most excellent, always never-ending love of my life.
I was just going to see how far you were going to take it.
Yeah, I could keep going.
Hello, my love. Tawny here.
We have a kind of cool topic today that resonated really with both of us. There was an article, we're going to put a link to it in the show notes recently in the New York Times, called How to Stop Ruminating, right? And the subtitle is Stuck in a Mental Loop of Worries and Problems That Seem to Have No End. Here's what you can do. And it's got this, you know, the idea of ruminating. To me, it really struck a chord because the way it's described is, you know, that cycle that a lot of us have. I certainly have. Tawny's got it too, where, you know, you might be rerunning and, you know, some kind of difficult conversation you had, or just a weird thing, or, you know, kind of reassessing the past, a past relationship or something like that, and it won't go away. Like, you keep sort of getting pulled into it well beyond something that, you know, might just be like, hey, I wanted to give that a little thought and now I'm going to move past it. And I'll give an example for what happened to me recently. Like, I feel, you know, I talk a lot about on the podcast how I speak to law firms about, you know, substance use and mental health disorders in the profession. And one of the things that I share in law firms is how I have had, and I've shared a lot on this podcast too, about how I've had full-blown anxiety attacks in front of audiences. It's now, I deal with that with a beta blocker now that is something that a lot of actors take, actresses take for stage fright. Mm-hmm. It's just something, there's no psychological effect of it. It's just something that prevents the physical manifestations of an anxiety attack from taking over by sort of, you know, beta blockers, heart patients take them to open up the capillaries. So you don't have that. But that has happened to me. And then recently, you know, I've been on a really good run since I started working with that. And then recently, I was presenting to a law firm and it was on Zoom, and my tech was just like, whatever was going on. It was like there was, you know, some sort of evil entity in my computer and my screen wouldn't share right. And then it cut me off. Like, it started flying through my slides at the end. It was just really bizarre and awful. And I felt terrible about it because I, you know, for 40 minutes of the presentation, I was just fine, but there were sort of, you know, about 8 minutes on the front end getting going, and then another sort of like 5 to 10 minutes on the back end that were disjointed and clearly not professional and clearly not what I wanted them to be. And I have been ruminating on this now for, I want to say like 3 weeks since it happened.
You know, it's funny, not funny that you bring this up, because I'm thinking, I'm like, she's still thinking about this.
Right?
You know, because I remember,
told you when it happened.
It happened and you told me about it. And then I saw you the next week and then we talked about it. And I'm like, you know,
but we all have things like that, you know, yeah. And it's just, which is, I think this is so such a great testimony to the beauty in talking about what's going on instead of feeling shame, feeling stigma.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with this, you know? And the article that we're talking about, we'll link to, there's a New York Times article. Yeah. We'll link to this in the show notes, but they talk about rumination versus like OCD level overthinking.
Right.
That might need like some mental help, you know, mental health help.
Yeah. And they also talk about, I mean, I think like now, you know, what I would like to do, and I'm trying to use some of these tools that they mention in here to get past it, because I know in my rational head, like, yeah, it was not a great presentation. I, you know, the technology may be the reason, but at the end, the screw ups, but it threw me off. And at the beginning and the end, it wasn't great. It was not great. And I need to, you know, practice what I preach with always saying, okay, that happened, move on, right? I'll be triply careful with my tech going forward, and I can't change what happened, right? I can't fix that presentation. But I, for some reason, I've been stuck in it in a way that even when I had the full-blown panic attacks, you know, probably 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was able to say, okay, I had a panic attack and I move on. And so this has been really helpful to me to try to stop for whatever reason. And I think, you know, it notes in the article that, you know, certain people are more likely to ruminate than others. And, you know, women apparently do it more than men, and people prone to perfectionism or insecurity, right?
Well, and that's what I was going to say, Lisa, is like, I think this is a good example of how sometimes you can view anxiety as a quote unquote good thing, because
yeah,
this is your career. Like, it's something that you care about your career. You care about how you're presenting at a firm, you know, like that, it means something to you. Your reputation matters. So it makes sense that you would ruminate
right
on something like that.
Right.
And, you know, I can say that logically and know that no one else is even thinking about that presentation anymore. I know, like, no one's thinking about that.
And
you know,
and it is getting better. I should say this. Like, it has been getting, it's taking me a long time to come back from it. That's all.
I do stuff like that where, like, I'll regret a text that I sent. I'm like, oh, that probably didn't sound
right.
That might have been taken poorly or something. And so, like, you know how on the iPhone you can click a text.
Yeah.
And reply to it. I'll do that. And then it's very humbling when I'm like, oh, I need to scroll pretty far back. This is how I'm still thinking about this thing I said. I'll reply to it. I'm like, hey, I was just thinking about this, and I realized the tone might have seemed a little off. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like,
no, this is, know, right?
This is, I haven't even thought, I didn't think that the first time. I can't believe you're still thinking about this. Like, you know, it's, we all have those things. And it's, I think, again, pointing out our anxiety is pointing out what's important to us. Your work is important to you. My friendships are important to me. So I don't think we would be ruminating on something we didn't care about.
Right. No. And it tends to be, you know, it tends to occur alongside, according to the article, things like OCD, anxiety, mm-hmm. depression, like things I have, you know, are, I think, make us more, or make me more prone to it. And there's a line in here that says people with depression who ruminate also tend to experience worse depression and for longer. Right. So I always thought of the idea of ruminating, like what I was doing, kind of obsessing about something like the presentation or a text or something like that, as being part and parcel of imposter syndrome, right? Of thinking that everybody's going to find out I'm a fraud, that I don't really deserve my seat at the table. But I thought this article was helpful in sort of like you were drawing the distinction between what is ruminating and what is overthinking something and whatever, and what is OCD. I cannot get past it. You know, I have to,
yeah.
You know, there is, I think it's important, like for me now, this to me is like a new word in my vocabulary. Instead of saying I'm obsessing, I can sort of say I'm ruminating, if that's what it is. Does that make sense?
No, that's perfect. And, you know, love words, love learning new words. And, but it's also, yes, words are my love language for sure. I like finding a word and feeling represented by it. It makes me feel less alone. Like, you know, embracing the term bisexual, like, you know, like, and then having the community and connecting with other people and seeing myself in them. That is very validating to me. Same with sober, curious, like all of these words, they're so much more than words. They really are resource, they're community. So when the New York Times published this article, it's introducing this word. Yes. It's telling you, hey, this is okay. This is what it is. Here's how to handle it. Here's how to manage this. And I was just going to read. So they give you a couple little bullets. I'm just going to go over those real quick. You know, how to break the rumination cycle. They spoke to several experts, and one was divert your attention. And I loved that. They actually talk about doing studies to show where, like, they had controlled groups of people that would obsess over something repeatedly and people that didn't. And it shows that, the people that were ruminating for longer had prolonged negative moods while they were just distracted. So this is just talking about mindfulness. Divert your attention. It's a distraction's not a bad thing. You know, like, as long as it's not keeping you from doing something important, but it's okay to divert your attention. Think about something else, call a friend, journal, or, you know, which leads us to another one of setting a worry timer. It's like, okay, let yourself obsess. Set a timer for 3 minutes. You're going to obsess about this thing for 3 minutes and you're going to go all in and then you're done. Then you're going to let it go. I really like that because I find it validating.
Yeah.
Because it's not just saying everything will get better or just read a happy book. It's like, acknowledging the feeling.
Yeah.
Which, as we talk about all the time, feeling your feelings in sobriety is still something I'm learning at 7 years.
We all are. It reminded me, I don't know if you're watching the new show on Apple TV, Shrinking. We haven't talked about this yet.
I haven't. No, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay. So one of the things is that it involves grief. And one of the things that suggestions to the people in it is to, when you're not confronting big grief, to spend 15 minutes a day, just shut the door, set your timer, feel the feels, feel the grief for 15 minutes a day, and then try to do that. I don't know, you know, whether that is legit or not, but that's what
it's one way to, it's one way to deal timer. With it. It's one way to deal with it. And, you know, it's maybe that doesn't work for you, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
And then the next one is immerse yourself in the moment, which is kind of like, it reminds me of what you say is like, where are your feet? Name 5 things in the room. What's in front of you? What's the temperature? What does the fabric of your skin feel like? You know, it takes you out of those obsessive thoughts of something that happened, and it brings you into the present moment. Where are your feet? My feet are on the floor in my office. I'm wearing a black t-shirt.
That's right.
You know, this is what's happening right now.
Yeah. And the other thing that they mentioned is to avoid your triggers, right? So if you're watching a Hallmark movie, brings up overwhelming feelings, don't do that, right? Or scroll on social media. That's a huge one.
Well, I like that they talk about if you are if you're not going to stop using social media, block or mute or unfollow the accounts that aren't helping you right now. You know, like when I was really obsessed with trying to lose weight, I had to unfollow fitness accounts. I didn't want to look at women's super fit bodies. That did not help me feel better about myself in any way. So that helped me. I avoided my trigger. I knew that that was just going to put me in a shitty mood. So I unfollowed. There's all sorts of ways to make these tools, you know, a little bit more catered to you. And you know, also therapy, talk about it in therapy.
Well, it also may be a sign of excessive rumination that you should consider therapy if you're not already doing it. Right.
I mean, I think everybody should be in therapy. I wish it was more affordable and more accessible. I think everyone could benefit from it. But, if it is, you know, if rumination is leading to obsession, that's probably manifesting in other ways too. And talk to other people about it, or just Google the word ruminating, Google OCD, see if any of this resonates with you, you know, like, again, just identifying might help you feel less alone and less stressed.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, one of the biggest pieces of it, that I think is that has helped me, right? Like when my mind, now that I think about what I've worked on with my therapist, is because my mind will just be like, I tend to catastrophize, right? Which is probably related to ruminating, right? I tend to think, you know, to totally catastrophize, and then this is going to happen, and then that's going to happen, and then I'm going to, you know, die homeless on the subway stairs was always
for me, Nick actually helps me with that. It's almost like a worry timer of like, he's like, okay, well, let's talk through the worst case scenario.
Right.
And once I talk through it and I'm talking
about that's what my therapist does with
me. The worst possible situation, it's like, I could still handle that. I would be okay.
I would be okay. So, right. She would say, and then what? And then what? And then what? You know?
And it's like, it's going to bring up some uncomfortable stuff. It might suck. Someone might, you know, things can happen, but those haven't happened yet.
Right.
Again, where are your feet?
If many of them happened, they wouldn't be this, you know, life-changing devastation that we make them out to be, right?
Yeah.
But one of the really, one of the things that I didn't realize the extent to which I was doing that until, you know, working with my therapist. And she would say all the time, you know, trying to get me to, because the first thing is recognizing that this is the cycle your brain is in, right? This is where your thinking is. And, you know, and I talk about imposter syndrome a lot. And it's a similar thing to imposter syndrome. Like when you start hearing that false story, right, that you're going to be found out as a fraud, you're about to get fired, this firm shouldn't have hired you, whatever, is to recognize that thinking and go, oh, all right, that's, you know, this is imposter syndrome. It's telling me a false story, right? The thing in recovery about fear, F-E-A-R, mm-hmm. false evidence appearing real. Imposter syndrome is telling yourself a story based on zero evidence. And it's telling yourself, you know, a horrible story, you know, based on any reason to believe that that's what's going on. And I think with the idea of ruminating, I've been doing that, practicing that as well, like with this latest thing, you know, which is like, wait, stop, let it go already. You know, nope. Like you said, nobody's thinking about it. Like, you know, I need to stop. I'm the only one left thinking about it. So I need to stop. Right.
But I mean, and it's also like, what's underlying is like rumination or, you know, something not going your way can bring up other feelings. It's like, did you feel embarrassed in a professional setting?
Yes.
You know, yes. Like that, and that sucks, that like feeling embarrassed doing the thing that you love doing.
Right.
Sucks. Like
it made me like, I should never do this again. I'm never, I think I'm done. I can't do this anymore. That's where it left me.
This is a sign that I'm not good at my job.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, we should post I sent you that video, that little Instagram video about imposter syndrome this morning. We should include that in the show notes.
Oh yeah.
It was just a little like 45 second clip of someone talking about how everyone is a fraud. No one really knows what they're doing. And you just have to, like, the bigger you make yourself, you know, like the bigger other people are going to be around you, lift yourself up, you're going to be okay. And it's, this sounds really corny the way I'm explaining it, but the speaker was great. So I'm going to share the video.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I will make sure that I share that. Yeah.
There can't be a song about rumination.
A song about rumination. No, no. The thing that came to my mind in talking about rumination is like how, and again, with imposter syndrome, it's like, I always think everybody's looking at me. Everybody's thinking about what I said. Everybody's thinking about my mess up in a presentation. And it's just not true. And what the idea, you know, goes back to this thing in recovery where we think we are the piece of shit in the center of the universe.
Oh yeah.
Sort of thing. And I have to realize, like, it's not all about me. And they're not thinking about me. And so I thought about You're So Vain by Carly Simon.
Oh, yes. That's perfect, actually.
Who do you think that song is actually about? I know she says it's like a composition of people.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it like, yeah, composite of like Eric Clapton? No, that was My Favorite Mistake by Sheryl Crow.
Yeah, that's Sheryl Crow.
Is You're So Vain
Mick Jagger?
Mick Jagger
and Warren Beatty. Yeah. And there was somebody else in there. Yeah.
I just Googled songs about rumination.
Yes.
And I found this study, which I'm about to go on a rabbit hole once we finish this, because I am who I am.
Send it to me and I'll include it.
The study is called, this is from 1991, Pessimistic Rumination in Popular Songs and Magazines Predict Economic Recession via Decreased Consumer Optimism and Spending.
Oh my God.
So this is kind of like sad songs are making people spend less money. Like, what kind of capitalist funding was behind?
That's nuts. That's nuts, because I know sometimes I will spend money to make myself feel better, which is not the answer either.
100%. Yeah. So, okay. Now I'm just nerding. I'm going to read two sentences from this study and then I'll shut up. Okay. Lyrics of the top 40 U.S. songs of each year from 1955 to 1989 were content analyzed for two psychological depressive traits, rumination about bad events and pessimistic explanatory style. That's insane.
Wow.
Someone did a study like that. That's kind of wild.
Who did that study? Are we sure it's legit?
Yeah, it's on Science Direct.
Oh, geez. Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, again,
we'll include that in
from 91. Too. So they don't know that people shop when they're sad. Now everyone knows that.
Retail therapy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a thing.
We're going to have a link to that article. It's New York Times. So let's make sure we include the free link. We can gift a link. And we'll include a link to this study. I don't even know if it's worth your time, but it's kind of funny.
I'm a little bit fascinated.
Yeah.
Partially because it's about music.
Of course. Like you say lyrical analysis. I'm in. Like, I don't even care what song it's about. I want to know.
That's right. That's right.
yeah. Okay. So Lisa, let's just I feel like we should do like a ceremony and like where you write down work presentation, Zoom,
and I need
Zoom
to freaking
issues.
Burn it. Yeah.
You know, I think we just need to let that go.
Yeah.
But I don't want to invalidate you because.
No, and it's getting better. I've been telling myself, you know, this is what I keep thinking about that. I need to move past that and stop. And, you know, because that's what my therapist says, literally stop. Tell your brain to stop.
Like, just picture the stop sign.
Yeah,
you know?
I do. And I picture her hand.
Yeah. Whatever you got to do. I mean, pull yourself into the moment. Where are your feet? What are you wearing?
Yes.
What do you smell? You know, like that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So
and this has been helpful to just talk about it. Talking about it, we can never underestimate the power of talking about something that is eating at us.
Yes. Stigma kills. Stigma kills. Talk about your mental health, because you're not alone.
No. And it's a constant conversation.
And just buy yourself something.
Oh, okay.
Prove this study wrong and buy yourself something.
It's funny because I kind of did that. And then I was like, I don't need this. And I returned it.
Okay. Well, that's fine too.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well,
thank you. Thank you for ruminating with me.
Let's get real meta.
Yeah.
We're going to do like a cacao ceremony and just let this go.
Let it go. I'm going to watch it fly off.
Yes. That's all right. So if you're listening and you're obsessing about something, you're not alone.
You're not alone.
You're not alone. Talk to your therapist, talk to a friend.
And try some of those tips because they are definitely helpful.
Check out the links, the article, because there's some really good tips in there. So thank you all for listening.
Thanks for listening. See you next time. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available in bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.